What's up? This is Movies On Up, episode 27. When the earth spits out the dead, they will rise to suck the blood of the living and to listen to free podcasts about movies, specifically zombie movies, which we may have mentioned last week. I know I mentioned it quite a bit, and I think maybe Kevin might have as well.
I may have.
You may have. You know what it is, though, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. And Dave, you actually, I think, did you pick this guy in our foreign bracket?
Probably.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember what happened at all.
Tended to pick the losers.
I think I've sided with you towards the end on some of them. But if you're like me and you don't remember the outcome of our director bracket, listen to our last week's episode as we narrowed down to find the best horror director of all time. While you're listening to that, you'll also probably find the movie that I just talked about in there. When you do find out what Italian zombie movie we were talking about, zombie movie, send it off to us in an email, moviesonup@gmail.com. Or once you're on our website at moviesonup.com, you can follow the Facebook link. And we do actually have a
Facebook.com/moviesonup.
Yeah, you can do that. That'll cut out the middleman, although we'd still like you to visit our website. It's pretty fly. Or you can get at us at Movies On Up on Twitter. Let us know what movie you think that is. And we legitimately do have a couple prizes, at least, that we'd love to give away to people that participate in our tagline contest. We've also got an Instagram that you can, I don't know, be friends with us or be in our circle. I think we'd probably just let our Instagram correspondent, Kevin, tell you about that.
Yeah, find us on Instagram, Movies On Up, no spaces, and you can see kind of us in action a little bit. No pictures of us, because we would break the lens, something along those lines. You can see teasers from our tagline contests. I posted some pictures of some buttons that we made, so you can see those sort of things. Follow us, we might follow you back, might have some trivia and that sort of thing for you.
Okay, so all sorts of fun stuff, no matter if you're a Twitterer, a Facebooker, a Instagrammer, or if you're on the MySpace, let us know. We'll make a MySpace page. I think it'll just be us and bands now.
Google Plus. We can start a Google Plus. Find us on LiveJournal.
One of us can probably set up the Google Plus that knows about Google.
One of us that has the Gmail, which we all have Gmail.
Well, technically now we do because you forgot the password to it and couldn't tell anybody.
Yeah.
So I apologize. If you have been Gmailing us stuff, I haven't been able to look at it because Dave's bogarted the password. I know what it is now, though. I can get in.
I forget what it is, but I'm sure I could find it.
I'll let you know off the air because, God forbid, we give all our minions our password for our email and they can read the emails that they don't send us. If they were to maybe read some emails that went internally, they might find out what is on store for this week, and that would ruin Kevin's teaser.
Yeah, on our Election Day episode, we worked some of Movies On Up favorite things into the news and give thoughts on a couple of trailers. Later, our feature presentation brings you our favorite spy films. But first, we will tell you which movie or movies wrecked it at the box office.
Yeah, Wreck-It Ralph opened wide this week and took number one. We set the over-under last week at $30 million, which is I thought was being conservative, but I was being conservative because of
the previous week,
Hurricane Sandy, and the previous week. I believe me and Kevin both went under. Ryan went over. Ryan's a big winner, $49 million for the top spot, $13,000 per screen average.
It's also on my fantasy film ball team.
It is. It's also less than a third of the way to its budget, so it's still got some ways to go. Number two was Flight, which we set at $15 million. Me and Kevin both took the over. Ryan took the under. Ryan's the big loser as it came in second with $24.9 million. It was in about half the theaters that Wreck-It Ralph was, so it actually had a better per-screen average by a couple hundred dollars. Argo, still, it only dropped 15% from last week to bring in another $10 million. It's still doing very, very well. It's at $75 million already, which that's one of my film ball picks. The other newcomer, Man with the Iron Fist, put it at $15 million. I think we all went under. Number four with $7.9 million.
Anything worth talking about with the Limiteds, Details, Jack and Diane? This must be the place.
Not really. The Bay, the one I really want to see, opened on 23 screens. Only brought in $19,000.
Yikes.
$866 per screen. So, yeah, this must be the place. Only $3,800 per screen. So nothing really to talk about on the Limited. Some of them, I mean, they looked good, but nothing really overperformed or anything.
fair enough. I don't think we had maybe the highest expectations for any of those movies. They did seem very, very indie.
Speaking of Jack and Diane, though, two screens, $294.
Wow.
Yeah.
Lesbian and, date night?
Yeah.
I guess.
And Vamps, the Alicia Silverstone, Amy Heckerling vampire movie, that was on one screen for $548. So
$548. Okay. So. I just wanted to be sure. I was like, man, was somebody like bring their golden Buckeye card or something?
So yeah, discount? At the top it was strong, but then outside of that, not a good week for limiteds.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you had Wreck-It Ralph and you had a movie like Flight that were going to be, I think we all knew that they would be the top two grossing movies. And with such wide appeal on both movies, it does kind of leave you as a bad weekend for smaller.
I mean, I don't think people realize like what Argo's doing. A 15% drop in its fourth week, that's, I don't think it's dropped more than 25% any week. Like every week, it's a low drop, which it's holding very strong.
And I think that's just, you know, somebody will see it the first week. They'll tell someone to see it the second week. And it literally replaces its audience every week.
That because the trailers looked good. The TV spots looked good. But I think a lot of people were left like, I don't really know what that's about.
Yeah.
And then that word of mouth will spread. And it's quietly made $75 million already. And then it's just going to get more buzz around award time.
Oh, definitely. So, I mean, I guess if you haven't, none of us have seen it yet, I don't think. But so there you go for next week. Or the week after. It's just one of those things where I think people want to get around to seeing it. It's just,
you've got a nice contrast to what's coming out now.
Yeah, you just have to kind of pick your spot where I would have seen it this week, but I went to see Wreck-It Ralph. I went with Jack the Jedi and Jimmy the Mons, three grown-ass men in a movie that was for kids. It is a kids movie. It's not quite as quite as 80s reminiscent
it's not video Roger game. Rabbit.
No, it really isn't. Kind of from the trailer with the scene there with all the bad guys, you thought, oh, maybe that'll be kind of how the entire movie. No, not really. Maybe there was an issue with having to pay more to get, you know, some of those characters to appear more in the movie. But for what the movie was, it was done well. John C. Reilly was very good. Sarah Silverman was very good. I think the writing was really good. I think some of the things may have been over some kids' heads, but they did a nice job. I think it's kind of like what Toy Story was for toys. You know, when people aren't around, it's kind of the same thing for video game characters.
How Pixar-y did it feel?
It's real weird because, I mean, it's not a Pixar movie.
I know.
It's DreamWorks, but DreamWorks is owned by Disney. Yeah. By Disney now. So it does seem, you know, kind of Pixar-y in that it was a good animated movie.
Because it definitely felt, just the trailers and everything about it felt more Pixar-y than anything else they've done.
Yeah, I think so. And maybe that's, like I said, maybe that's just because we kind of knew, and even just not just Toy Story, but like, you know, Monsters, Inc. was kind of the, we all know about monsters in your closet. We all know about toys we had when we were young and video games. Well, what do they do when we're not around? I guess that theme, you know, has been in a couple Pixar movies, and that theme was definitely around in this one. I enjoyed myself. I went to see it in 3D. You probably don't need the 3D for this.
I did read that there's a certain princessy moment in the movie that kind of takes a shot at Disney and kind of distracts from the plot for a moment.
No. I think I know the moment you're talking about, but it didn't take me out of anything. No, it just like it was actually it made sense, you know, for the character or whatever. But so I guess so. That's my review of Wreck-It Ralph, which was decent. Maybe we'll get around to seeing Argo. It won't be next weekend because I think I know what my plans are for this weekend. So I'll just have to wait. But it's something I'd like to see. I'm not sure that any of us are ridiculously high and going to wait in line to see our next movie. If it ever does, in fact, come out, it's been talked about for a long time, and it is Leonardo DiCaprio's Twilight Zone movie. They finally have revealed, backdoor revealed, a little bit of the plot, and it's about a test pilot that breaks the speed of sound and ends up time traveling as a result, and they didn't specify whether it's traveling forward.
Isn't that the plot of the 90s Mel Gibson movie Forever Young?
I feel like there's been several movies that maybe not even as close, you know, like break the speed of sound, you travel through time. I think it's more or less just a jumping off point. It's to get them into a Twilight Zone-esque type story, but Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. I don't think it's enough to go on, really.
Like, time traveling is probably the wrong words for it. Like, you need to dimension jump for Twilight Zone to make sense, because we know what happened in the past. Like, we're familiar with that. Like, you need to be switching dimensions, but I don't think this... I didn't put any thought into this, because I don't think this movie's ever going to happen. It seemed like it was its closest with Matt Reeves. He dropped off after a month. And, I mean, I'd like to see it. I mean, I'm not anti it. Like, if they can put it together and make it seem like coherent and well done, I'll be behind it, but I don't see it happening. It's been around too long.
I still wish it was an anthology instead of a single storyline, especially after hearing what story they're going with, unless they're leaving out details.
I think they're being purposely vague. I mean, this, like we said, this has been around for so long, and these are really the first plot details, other than it's not an anthology movie, that have come out. And I think that there'll probably be some more if they do, you know, kind of progress with the story. I think there'll be more that comes out. But at least, you know, that's kind of our jumping off point for what this movie's about, is, you know, it's a displaced individual, which is kind of a theme in a lot of Twilight Zone stuff. So I guess we'll just kind of leave that one where it's at for the time being. Stick around for more updates as they become available. Perhaps a bit of a shock here, Amazing Spider-Man 2 villain may be played by Jamie Foxx. He tweeted that he dressed as Electro for Halloween and that the costume fit pretty well. He's in early talks with the studio to play Electro.
He's an interesting choice, but I think he's talented enough. But I didn't care about the first one, so I really don't care about the sequel. But it's interesting. I don't know if it's as interesting as Rhys Ifans as the Lizard, but I like Jamie Foxx and the decisions he's making.
You always want to bring an Oscar winner aboard. I mean, because then you can smack that right on the poster. There was a black Electro in the extended universe, so it's not like they're going out of the box and casting, you know,
a black.
Yes, a black. But I'm fine with it. Personally, the thing I like, I'm not a fan of the Spider-Man reboot so far. I like that they're not using Raimi's villains and they're not doing the Goblin yet.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. I think Electro's kind of a neat villain. I like him back from the Sinister Six days. So I'm glad that they've, like you said, have not done the Doc Ock and not done the Goblin yet. I mean, obviously that's coming, but...
Plus, when has Fox actually played a villain? Like, when has Jamie Foxx been in something that you're not rooting for him in?
He was a good guy in that, but I wasn't rooting for any of them.
Yeah, but, yeah, that movie was terrible. But, that's I mean, what I'm I saying. Don't think he's been a villain yet. He'll be coming off of Django. He'll be coming off of White House Down, where he's the president. I think it's an interesting choice. Like, I like the choice of Jamie Foxx. I could care less that it's Electro.
Yeah, I think he's charismatic, and I think that, like you're saying, it's Electro, so maybe you need Jamie Foxx to give it that jolt.
Spark?
Yeah. Either way, those are both equally poor. So unless you've got something to add, Kevin, we're just going to pretend.
Okay, there you go.
Either way, we're just going to move on before things really get out of control. We'll stick with comic books, though. We all like the comics. And apparently, so does Guillermo del Toro. He's assembling his own superhero team for DC. It's called Heaven Sent. It's going to feature magical characters from the DC universe, characters of which you are all no doubt familiar with, such as Deadman, the Spectre, Swamp Thing, Constantine Hellblazer, Phantom Stranger, Zatanna, Zatara, Sargon, and Ertigan the Demon. Three.
If anybody's going to make it, it should be Del Toro, but I'd rather just see him do a Hellblazer movie. Like, the first Constantine movie, like...
It wasn't horrible.
I liked it. Keanu Reeves was terribly miscast, but I thought he did well with it. I liked it enough that I wanted a sequel, but I'd rather see Del Toro do a Hellblazer reboot, but I'd be on board. I mean, I like Del Toro.
The interesting thing about this story is that it kind of opened up the window a little bit, and it sounds like he was offered Justice League, and he said no, but then with the prospect of this, he's like, hell yes, I want to do this.
No, I don't want to make the Justice League with characters people know. Give me
Swamp Thing.
Give me your tired. Give me your weak.
I mean, we talked about Dave hammered this point home during the director deathmatch, is that everything he makes kind of feels like a horror movie, whether it is or not. So if he made the Justice League, I mean, I don't think...
Yeah, he couldn't really horror it up. But, you know, with Constantine being in there, yeah, I mean, I think it does make sense for his style. It just, I'm not sure about this movie. Like, I like the Swamp Thing movie. I mean, the second one was all right, but I like the first one well enough.
Is this movie happening because of, what's the...
The other Marvel, yeah, the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians of the Galaxy,
yeah.
You're talking two completely different mindsets there. Like, I see where you can make the connection. It's a superhero
team that nobody knows about.
Right. But I think that you're talking different ballparks. But I could see where that connection could be made.
I could just see DC saying, we need to...
Everything they're doing...
Exactly.
We're going to do a version that no one will care about. You like comics. Do you know all these people that I just named?
Not all of them. No.
How many do you know?
I know Deadman, the Spectre, Swamp Thing, Hellblazer, Phantom Stranger. Pretty much everybody but Zatanna, Zatara, Sargon, and Etrigan the Demon.
The only reason I know Zatanna is because I think she was in the Justice League video game that they made, and that was shite. But
she do that song with Rob Thomas too.
Yeah, she did quite a few. I think she did one with Michelle Branch as well. Vacancies at Wes Anderson's Grand Budapest Hotel filling up fast. Saoirse Ronan of Hannah and the Lovely Bones fame has signed on to play the female lead. Johnny Depp, Angela Lansbury, both out, but Bill Murray, Jude Law, and Jason Schwartzman.
Add Jeff Goldblum in. As well.
Oh, okay, very good, because I was just about to mention Edward Norton, the aforementioned Mr. Goldblum, Adrian Brody, Willem Dafoe, and Owen Wilson, still rumored, cross out Jeff Goldblum, because apparently he is now in.
This is the one that's taking place in Europe.
Budapest, I think.
Yeah.
Which is in Europe,
right? Yeah, yes. So I'm on board. I like Saoirse Ronan. Like, I thought she would blow up bigger than she has so far, but she's been smart with her roles. Like, we'll see what The Host does. That's kind of her, like, launch to a mainstream, I think. But
it wasn't. I kind of think it was Lovely Bones. You know what I mean? Like,
that was her introduction to a mainstream. But
I think it launched her. We're going to, I mean, it's not worth arguing about.
Yeah, I mean, she's not, yeah. I wouldn't say she's a mainstream, like, known name yet. She's not.
Yeah, she really hasn't followed it up with too much.
Because
so maybe
she was
that's
wrapped up
point,
in that Snow White that got shelved. And, I mean, that'll change with The Host, and then this will be bouncing off of that. But I think she's awesome. I think she's super talented.
I like Wes Anderson. Moonrise Kingdom, one of my favorites of the year. But he kind of toes this line where he makes the same movie over and over and over again. And this is just, it's going to be more of the same. I'd like to see him shake it up a little bit.
And not have Owen Wilson in it?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but you just said it's one of your favorites of the year.
It is, it is.
So when Budapest comes out, it'll likely be one of your favorites
of the
year.
But you know why I like Moonrise Kingdom? Is because he did something different. Even though he had some of his regulars, the movie focused on kids, which is something he hasn't done. I mean, this...
Well, I mean, in fairness, Saoirse Ronan is the lead in this, and she's a kid. So maybe, you know, it is going to be different. People tell me all the time, well, I get tired of Bill Murray playing Bill Murray in every movie. I don't care.
It works.
I like it.
Like, I'll never knock
do
anybody.
That until you aren't acting anymore.
If you find a formula and you stick with it and it works, do it.
Give me more of the same.
Michael Cera gets shit for playing the same thing, but it's worked in everything he's done.
He plays Jesse Eisenberg and vice versa.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, I'll never give anybody shit for that. He's got a formula. I love Wes Anderson.
Yeah, and I mean, I love Madea. There's a formula for that, and it keeps working. So
I would never criticize Tyler Perry for that.
No, neither would I. This is a Tyler Perry house. This is Big Mama's house.
House of Pain.
Only one of those things actually is a Tyler Perry.
One's close enough.
Yeah, email us which one you think it is, and maybe you get a prize for that. And I think now is kind of the point in the podcast where we're going to stop talking about movies, because movies are dumb. Books are where it's at. Books are for the intelligent and the initiated, and really only one of us knows anything about books, so it's time for Books on Up. Colin Firth from The King's Speech, that's another initiated movie for smart people, will play a literary agent, Max Perkins, in the biopic Genius. Perkins was the agent for Ernest Hemingway, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and Thomas Wolfe. The story will focus on the relationship between Perkins and Wolfe, played by pod favorite Mikey Fassbender. The writer of Hugo, John Logan, will adapt the biography. It is set to begin filming all the way in 2014.
It's an Oscar movie. Like, it truly is. You got Colin Firth. I think Hugo was nominated for screenplay. I know it was for picture. And then Fassbender. I love the choices Fassbender makes, because he'll do your mainstream, He'll X-Men. Do the action movie like Haywire, do his franchise like X-Men. And then he's still doing these kind of movies, which...
I think Fassbender went to a Tony Robbins like clinic, and he can't say no because he's got The Counselor, the new Steve McQueen movie, X-Men, Prometheus 2, Assassin's Creed, and Jane Got a Gun.
Yeah, Jane Got a Gun will be awesome. Assassin's Creed, I'm still not convinced that'll happen. I hope it does, but strike while you're hot. That's...
Yeah, I don't blame him. I mean, I'll do everything I can.
That could be a large reason why this is filming in 2014.
Although, whenever I hear, like, this guy's going to do this movie in 2 years, it makes me nervous that, like, something's going to happen that you may end up, like, having to pull out. I'm not nervous because I don't care. I'm not going to see this movie. But I just, right now, he's cast, and I think that is shaping up to be a good cast. But we'll see by the time this gets going if one or both of them are still attached.
But in fairness, do you know how many steps back Michael Fassbender has to take to pull out of something?
I want to see what he says no to. Like, he does so many movies that I want to see what actually he turns down.
I was just going to let Dave's penis joke breathe for a bit.
No shame in that knob.
I had to wait my turn for it.
Oh, I know. I knew you were going to say something. It's like, okay, this is going to be about Fassbender. If Dave's going to make a cut, we haven't done this in a while. We're going to old school movies on up. Old school Eric and Dave. We'll talk about Mikey's dick. We've never talked about Joe Hill's dick, and apparently his work is no longer under lock and key at Fox. The network passed on the series adaptation. Roberto Orci and Alex Kurtzman are now producing, and they are hoping that Universal will pick up the project as a film trilogy. And I know you've got to be pumped, right?
No, I'm not into it.
I thought you were.
After I criticized Horns, thinking it didn't sound good, listener Jason West is the one that pimped lock and key to me.
Continuity police.
Yeah, Jason yeah, West. He's the one that said Joe Hill's actually pretty cool and that Lock and Key is a good comic. The pilot that they filmed for Fox with Jesse McCartney is actually in full on YouTube.
Oh, cool.
But I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, the pilot screened at Comic-Con, but I don't know what the response was. It obviously didn't get picked up.
I guess not, but I've heard the pilot was actually pretty good, so people were surprised that Fox passed on it, especially with having the Fringe guys on board and some of the other
Orci and Kurtzman are like what you were saying about Fassbender. They're everywhere. Like, you can't go 3 weeks without hearing Orci and Kurtzman signed on to write something or produce something or help with something.
I think one of the problems with Lock and Key might have been oversaturation, because originally there was a Fables television show going to be picked up. There was Once Upon a Time, Grimm.
And
Lock and Key is not exactly the same, but throwing another supernatural book into a TV show. I actually took to Twitter just to see what people had to say about this. And it sounds like a lot of Lock and Key fans actually prefer the idea of the movie trilogy to the series. So that's
I think there's less chance of it just kind of getting drawn out and going flat.
I mean, a lot of it I think will depend on the success of Horns, because that could turn Joe Hill into something, because he's not riding off his dad's name.
I was gonna say it could turn him into Stephen King.
Yeah, like he's not using that name to get him anywhere. So sure. If Horns does well.
Yeah, I think they'll have a much easier path with this, but I think it sounds interesting, so I'm willing to at least give it a try watching the thing on YouTube, seeing how that turned out. That's free.
I trust Westy.
Yeah, we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. We got to come up with a sounder for Westy. I've got an idea. We'll talk about it. Jason Statham to star in a Heat remake. Not that Heat, relax. It's the 1986 joint with Burt Reynolds. It was slated to be directed by Brian De Palma. He left. In comes Simon West, who did Con Air and also directed Statham in The Mechanic and The Expendables 2. He gets an early Christmas present as Statham will star as the mercenary that takes on the Vegas mob after his hooker friend gets roughed up.
So it's just a Statham movie.
Yes.
You bring in Simon West, who took The Mechanic that started off strong and started off like it could have been like the original, which was more than just a Hitman movie.
A Statham movie.
And it turned it into a Statham movie. And I like Statham. I thought he was really good in the Guy Ritchie movies. Mm-hmm. He's really good when he's not being what Jason Statham's become, but he's not getting that opportunity to do that anymore.
Simon West is going to turn it into that kind of movie.
That's all he knows.
If Brian De Palma made this, I think you might stretch Statham a little bit more.
De Palma would be very different, but I will give West credit. Con Air was really good. It was a good action movie. And The Expendables 2, much better, and a different movie than The Expendables 1. There were some different things to that. So I'm not willing to say that West is just ridiculous. But he's obviously got familiarity with Statham. I agree with Dave. Like, when he's able to do different things, I actually prefer him when he's like the caricature of Statham, when he does Crank. Like, I love those movies.
I love Crank. Yank my Crank.
No, I'm pulling I Love Crank, and that's going to be reused at some point whenever you say something that I disagree with. I love Crank. The Muppets will take this waltz to Europe. Christoph Waltz signs on to star in the sequel to The Muppets, which will see the gang travel to Europe. We'll begin filming in January with hopes to wrap in time to meet a December 2013 release date. James Bobin will direct again and write the script with Nicholas Stoller. Brett McKenzie, who won a Best Song Oscar for the original, is returning to write the songs.
Christoph Waltz is a weird choice. He's not in the Siegel role where he's with the Muppets. He's an Interpol agent chasing them, but
which seems to make sense.
It makes sense. But he's a weird choice to be like the main dude in the Muppets movie.
I can see it.
I can, but it's an interesting choice to go from Siegel to Waltz.
Well, I mean, there again, it's
Waltz.
It is a very different. They're playing different characters.
Oh yeah. But I'm saying the Siegel was the center point.
And this will be, you know, he could be the center point too, but in a very different kind of way. And I think if you're going to have, you know, like a European dude that's, you know, kind of intimidating, but not, you know, ridiculously scary to kids, I think.
Especially if they play it how Chris Cooper was in The Muppets.
Yeah.
I thought Chris Cooper was awesome in
it.
Like,
he was
this intimidating, like, villain that was awesome.
It was light too.
So, yeah.
James Bobin being back gives me hope, too. I mean, he pretty much made the first movie, the Muppets movie, into a Flight of the Conchords movie, and it sounds like it'll probably...
With McKenzie coming back to do the song, so...
Sounds like it'll happen.
They're going to introduce even more Muppets. I think it'll be good. I'm disappointed Siegel's not coming back, but I understand. But the Muppets were around long before him. They're going to be around long after him, so they don't need him to survive.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, like, you know, the kids don't really care one way or another about Jason Siegel. They're going to be pumped to see another Muppets movie. And I'm glad, you know, after so long, I'm glad they're getting another chance.
The schedule worries me. Start filming in January for
December.
That's
short.
That's rough, but that's quick. They want to be wrapped by April. That gives them 8 months to have the movie done.
Yeah.
But
well, we'll see. I mean, it's not like Muppets aren't union. They can work. They don't got to worry about breaks and shit. Francis Lawrence will finish out The Hunger Games. He's officially signed on to direct Mockingjay Parts 1 and 2.
I only put that in there because we had one, like, there was talk that the way every, because they're the next three Thanksgivings. He's still filming Catching Fire for this coming Thanksgiving, or not next Thanksgiving, not the one that's in a couple of weeks.
In a couple of weeks.
But then the next two Thanksgivings are also these. So there was talk that he might not have the prep time to get to do either the Mockingjays, and that they might do two different directors. So they must like what they're seeing on Catching Fire. I still think Gary Ross is a huge loss, but...
And Gary Ross quit because there wasn't enough time.
Exactly.
So...
Now, apparently Francis Lawrence doesn't need a whole lot of time. He's on fire. I don't know, whatever. Press play again! VHS 2 is officially happening. Adam Weingart is the only returning director from the first one. He'll be joined by the Raid director, Gareth Evans, be co-directing with Timo Tajanhanho, who I just saw one of his movies. I think it was... We'll talk about it later. I don't want to spoil my watch this. Blair Witch Project co-director Eduardo Sanchez will be co-directing a segment with Greg Hale. Simon Barrett, who wrote Wingert segment for the first one, and Hobo with a Shotgun director Jason Eisner round out the creative team.
I like the Gareth Evans choice is unique. I like that. Eduardo Sanchez bringing him back. It's different. Like, it's unique. It's not taking the Masters of Horror approach where you're getting Coscarelli. You're getting
people Hooper. That you know. You've
yeah,
heard of.
It's getting, because even Gareth, I wouldn't consider him a horror director, so I'm interested. And I hate to say, I didn't like the first one, but I'm interested
and
in this.
These guys are drastically different in styles, which makes this very interesting. I mean, you go from the guy that did Blair Witch and the guy that did Hobo with a Shotgun. obviously very, very different
to the
films.
Guy who did The Raid. Like,
right.
Yeah, so I'll see it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll see it too. I like anthology movies. I wish this one, I wish VHS 1 was better.
I hope but my problems with VHS 1 will be resolved. I hope the interconnecting story is done a little better.
And I do have to make a mea culpa. I saw a movie by another guy named Timo. Not this Timo. It's a different one.
What movie?
I'll tell you when we get there. All right. But this guy, like, I'm looking at Timu Trajanhanto. He's got nothing.
Yeah.
Really, really nothing.
And that's what's cool. Like, we didn't bring it up, but, like, Gareth Evans is co-directing with him. Eduardo Sanchez is co-directing with a longtime producer.
With Greg Hill, yeah. Yeah, so I mean, you get guys that have done it before, and you're teaming them up with somebody new. So at the very least, I think it's an interesting exercise in filmmaking. And
yeah.
Hopefully the movie will turn out halfway decent, too. It wouldn't be so bad. There's been a couple movies from this next franchise that turned out to be halfway decent. And I don't know, I feel like this could be a weekly thing, if we let it. This week in Star Wars Rumors. You guys are just going to have to kind of roll with us on this one. We're probably going to be doing it a lot because it's one-third my podcast and I like one-third of the Star Wars movies. Matthew Vaughn was rumored to be in talks to direct, and Harrison Ford rumored to be down for going solo again. Han Solo, that is, which is weird because for the past 30 years, he's done nothing but tell people how much he despises Star Wars. But when there's a check in it...
I think Matthew Vaughn would be an awesome choice.
Yes.
And the reason I believe these rumors a little bit is he just left X-Men. He just walked off of a franchise. So it would make sense
if you were going to go to a bigger one.
If this was in the works. But, I mean, he's batting 1,000 for me. Like, I've loved, not just enjoyed, I've loved every movie he's done.
And have you loved Stardust?
I absolutely loved Stardust.
Okay, it was good.
I think Stardust is completely underrated.
Probably.
And it was so epic. And, this, like, I just thought he nailed Stardust, and I think that's closest to what Star Wars... I think that's the closest in tone that Star Wars would be.
Yeah, I agree. It's not kick-ass.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not even trying to be a smart-ass, but yeah. I'm just like...
I think Dave's right. You know, we're still speculating at this point, but the fact that he stays on as producer, his script stays with X-Men, leaves the project as director, you know, he just so happens to be attached to Star Wars... It looks like that's probably the case, but
yeah, that'd be fine. I mean, there's you know, a couple of directors I could think that would be great if they, you know, would direct Star Wars movies. He'd be on that list, and yeah. I mean, there's nobody that
I think we actually brought him up last week.
It's entirely possible. I mean, I tend to bring him up for a lot
of
different things.
Him and Brad Bird were the two names I think we mentioned.
Yeah, so I mean, either one of those two would be fine. And we're still, I mean, I know they're trying to have this stuff wrapped up here in the next, actually, a couple 2016. I think is when they want to have. Episode 7.
That's 2015.
2015?
They want to go up against...
That's right.
The Avengers and...
Yeah.
And Justice League.
Yeah, that's... Still, from the point they are now, that seems quick. But hey, if they get Matthew Vaughn on board, I think that may turn some opinions on that movie to the light side of the Force, so to speak. We're going to kind of stick in before we get to our trailers, which are back in a... reduced role, but we'll kind of ease back into that. I think we all kind of forgot that we were doing trailers again. I know I sure as hell did. But something we have been getting used to lately, it's kind of given a top five from each of us. And in honor of the new Bond movie coming out this coming Friday as we record the podcast, we're going to give you our top five sneaky good spy movies. So who would like to go first between Kevin and Dave? Because I won't.
I'll go first.
All right, Dave.
My number five. Going back all the way to 1985, which I usually don't reach back that far from my lists. Spies Like Us.
Okay.
Starring Chevy Chase, Dan Aykroyd. They think they're government spies, but turns out they're just bait, essentially, in the Cold War. John Landis, fantastic comedy director. It's just a great 80s comedy with Aykroyd and Chase at their peak. Not so much. It's more a comedy than a spy movie, but... I had to count it.
No, I think it's perfectly...
Spy is in the title, yeah. So get off my ass.
No, I think that's an awesome choice. There's a movie from around that time that I will have the longest face if nobody puts on there, but I like that one. Kevin, what's your number
mine
five?
Mine is from right around that time. It was No Way Out, which was kind of a last effort at a Cold War spy movie before the Berlin Wall fell. This movie came out...
Wait, right, the Berlin Wall fell?
Yeah.
Shit.
And it has Gene Hackman, Kevin Costner, and Costner's a pretty sneaky guy in this one. He's pretty solid.
That was close to my list. That was very close. I that was one of those that it's like, is that really a spy movie? But I like that was when Costner was at his peak. Like, that was right around the time of Revenge, when Costner was just a fucking badass. That's a good choice.
This role is a really good Costner one.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good choice there.
The dog agrees with you, the neighbor's dog.
Yeah, he's howling.
Likes Kevin Costner. My number five is a movie from 1965. It is Thunderball. It is the only Bond movie which has all the 00 agents in a scene together. It was so good that Connery actually remade that movie as Never Say Never Again, which is kind of the bastard Bond film, which is not actually considered by most people an actual Bond movie.
I thought the Timothy Dalton one would have been a
no, those aren't bastards. Actually, they're not too bad. Just some fun stats. He fucks 3 chicks in this movie, kills 22 dudes, which was the most for any Bond movie up until Tomorrow Never Dies, when they killed 25. So that's my number 5. Dave, your number 4.
My number 4 might be what you're thinking. It's from 1984. It's also more of a comedy than a spy movie. Top Secret, starring Val Kilmer.
It's not.
Damn it.
That's all right. You guys still have, between you, 7 more.
Oh, it's not.
I'm
going to
guess it's not me.
Oh, that, shit.
No, Top Secret, it was right after Airplane. It's when spoof movies were actually good, and they weren't just, let's make as many Miley Cyrus jokes as we can. And this is when Val Kilmer, I don't think people remember how fucking funny he was. This is around the time of Real Genius.
Yeah.
Those are two of my Top Secret, Top Real Gun. Genius are two of my like favorite 80s comedies, because Val Kilmer just kills it. And Top Secret, like I said, more of a comedy than a spy movie, but it's a spoof of a spy movie. It was awesome.
My number 4 is Steven Spielberg's Munich. It's based on a true story. I can't say director's names right ever.
Steven Spielberg teams up with David Cronenberg to direct Munich. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I can't go on. But this was a methodical, like a realistic approach to the genre. And it not only did with like the espionage, but it more focused on the ethics of what you're doing as a spy. And it was pretty good. That's why it's number 4 on my list.
Good movie. That Spielberg, good director. My number 4 is On Her Majesty's Secret Service from 1969. It is the best of the George Lazenby Bond movies. Never mind that it is the only George Lazenby Bond movie. This was the one that really kind of established Ernst Stavro Blofeld, the bald guy that Mike Myers took off with Dr. Evil, as kind of a principal Bond villain. And it also, if we didn't have this movie, we probably never would have had Dr. Claw with Inspector Gadget. So there you go. And actually, spoiler alert, in this movie, James Bond gets married. And obviously his wife is one of the 3 chicks that he manages to fuck in this movie. Kills 8 dudes. So that's my number 4.
My number 3, I'm veering away from comedies and giving what I think is like a penultimate spy movie.
That's a good word. I like that.
That kind of is underrated. I mean, it's got the twists, the turns, the double crosses, the car chases. Ronin from 1998, starring Robert De Niro and Jean Reno. Really fucking good spy movie. Yeah, like Robert
one
De Niro,
of the best car chases ever.
Yes. I think it changed car chases on the big screen. Like, they changed dramatically after that movie, and it's just such a good movie. Jean Reno was perfect. De Niro was at his best. Very, very good movie.
Yeah, my number 3 is a movie I love. It's a really fun one to watch. It's from the 60s, and it stars Richard Burton, who was in a lot of spy movies. It also stars Clint Eastwood, and it's more of an action movie, but basically these guys, these are sent in to, they're Nazis, they're dressed up as Nazis, and they go to this castle, and they try and retrieve an American, and it's like Clint Eastwood just fucking killing Nazis left and right, and it's pretty sweet.
I think I was paying attention, but maybe if people weren't, what's the name of the movie?
Yeah, you never get a title.
Oh, it's Where Eagles Dare.
Okay.
And it's there's some classic stunts in this one. There's one where there's a fight on top of a cable car that's like suspended. It's pretty awesome. There's some really neat stunts in this. Yeah, I'm sorry. Where Eagles Dare. Watch.
Yeah, no problem. I thought I didn't think I missed it, but
told you everything about it.
Yeah, I've been guilty of doing that myself from time to time. My number 3. And you guys may be starting to sense a pattern here. It's from 1995. Goldeneye. Without this movie, we don't have Bond going today. Some actual serious movie stars in this movie, for the first time, really, in the entire Bond franchise. They had so many. Pierce Brosnan, obviously. Judi Dench, her first Bond movie. Alan Cumming was in this. Famke Janssen. And Minnie Driver, very briefly. but a hell of a cast. Brosnan was actually originally cast to play Bond for The Living Daylights. As Dave mentioned, one of the Timothy Dalton joints, but he couldn't because of Remington Steele. Just a couple other folks that were considered for the role of Bond, because that's always a fun thing, for the role of Bond for GoldenEye. Liam Neeson, Hugh Grant, Sam Neill, and Mel Gibson. So I think we came out pretty good.
You know who I really wanted as new Bond before Daniel Craig got it?
Who's that?
Clive Owen.
Yeah, I would have been down with that.
He is Bond. Because Croupier, it was right after Croupier that they were looking for a new Bond, and he was fucking Bond in that movie.
Yeah, I think Daniel Craig does a good job, and I think he's a different Bond than all the other ones, so I'm totally okay with what they have. But yeah, Clive Owen would have been an awesome choice. I think Liam Neeson would have been really good. I'm not so sure Mel Gibson would have done it for me, and Hugh Grant scares me as well.
Hugh Grant gets Bond and the franchise goes in the toilet.
Yeah, but as it turns out, Pierce Brosnan got it and it climbed out of the toilet, really. Just to give you some stats, fucks two chicks, kills 12 people.
My number two, from 1992, I think one of the most underrated movies ever. It's just a fun, lighthearted movie, Sneakers, starring Robert Redford, Sidney Poitier, River Phoenix, a young Stephen Tobolowsky, Ben Kingsley, Mary McDonnell, James Earl Jones, Dan Aykroyd. It's just about this.
You're just trying to outdo my GoldenEye cast, aren't you?
No, well, I mean, this was at the peak for all of them, too, and this movie doesn't seem to get talked about a whole bunch nowadays, but it was just a fun, like, mainstream, broad movie. Robert Redford leads a team of computer hackers that test security systems for a living, and they're hired by two government officials to steal the black box, which is a huge supercomputer. Turns out they're not government people. So, and then all hell breaks loose. It's an awesome movie. Everybody's at their best. Like, Sidney Poitier, Robert Redford, River Phoenix, like, just between those three, there's so much goddamn charm in that movie.
Yeah, I actually almost put Sneakers on my list. I like it. My number two, Alfred Hitchcock's North by Northwest, which is kind of a spoof because it's just a regular guy's mistaken for a secret agent, gets chased across the country, kind of trying to figure out, like, how am I going to get out of this? I'm just a regular guy.
Not that it matters, but I like that pick. That's solid. My number two is from 1974. It's The Man with the Golden Gun, starring Christopher Lee, who's one of my favorite dudes, one of my favorite character actors, as Scaramanga with his third nipple. It also stars the little guy Tattoo, who's in Fantasy Island as Nick Knack. Britt Eklund played Ms. Goodnight in that movie, whose ex-husband, Peter Sellers, played James Bond in Casino Royale, 1967. It was a comedy, not really what we think of as a Bond movie, but that was the first time.
He was also Agent Cousteau or whatever.
Yeah, and Peter Sellers did a lot of stuff. I just, being that I happen to be talking about Bond movies, her ex-husband played Bond. She was actually married to Bond at one point. It was the last Bond movie directed by Guy Hamilton, who did Goldfinger, Diamonds Are Forever, and Live and Let Die. I really, really like two of those. Live and Let Die just got left off my list. And this movie is the only movie where Bond actually fucks more people than he kills, and the ratio is 2-1.
He only kills one person.
Yes.
Huh.
Only kills one person in this entire movie, and it's my number two. It's my favorite Roger Moore Bond movie.
Moving on to my number one. Now we're back in my the 2000s where I'm more comfortable. 2002, another one that's fun, not so much a traditional spy movie. Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, directed by George Clooney. Sam Rockwell playing Chuck Barris, the host of many game shows, who insisted he was a CIA spy and wrote this ridiculous memoir. It's just a movie about those memoirs and him being a spy. It's a unique spy movie because it isn't your traditional, but, and it's not, I wouldn't call it just a comedy because there's a lot more to it. And it introduced the world to George Clooney, the director, because for a first feature, goddamn, is it beautiful. Like, he does shit with the camera that many experienced directors wouldn't even try to do. And yet he just nailed it.
That's a good call. Yeah.
Yeah. Confession. It's such a good fucking movie. Again, I think this is underrated also, cause I don't think this gets raved about as much as it's a really good fucking movie.
My number one is often regarded as the greatest spy movie of all time. It is The Spy Who Came In From the Cold. It is based on a highly regarded novel. It's about a Cold War spy and his methods. Shot in black and white. It's on Criterion, which kind of gives it access to me. That's why I knew about it. It also stars Richard Burton, who I mentioned earlier. And it heavily influenced, if anybody saw Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
I love Tinker. That almost made my list.
Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy is basically a remake of The Spy Who Came In From a Cold. It's instead of action, car chases, you know, humor, it's like a serious, you know, giving you the terms of espionage.
Okay, my number one is widely regarded as the best Bond movie. It is from 1964, Goldfinger. A couple interesting facts. It is the first appearance of a laser beam in a movie, 1964. It's got two of the most iconic Bond villains, Gert Forbe as Goldfinger, and Oddjob, the little Japanese wrestler guy with the razor hat. Interestingly, the producers actually wanted Orson Welles to play Goldfinger, which would have been awesome, but he cost way too much money. This is the movie that gave us Pussy Galore, Honor Blackman. And it also had Shirley Eaton as the Jill Masterson, better known as the chick, completely covered in gold. People actually thought she died. There was kind of a rumor, maybe if Snopes would have been around back then, that would have been a great thing for them. But there was a rumor going around that Shirley Eaton died from asphyxiation, being covered in gold for that long.
They ripped that scene off from If Looks Could Kill, though.
Yes. You're right.
Isn't that how the bad guy died in that? Doesn't he get crushed by gold?
I think they killed people in all sorts of Bond fashions in that movie.
Yeah.
To put that on the list just to.
I love that movie.
Goldfinger?
Yes.
Yeah.
If Looks Could Kill.
I agree. Well,
Richard Grieco should be the next Bond.
Just to finish up, Bond fucks two people, kills 10. So he's back to his normal ways.
I had a couple honorable mentions. I'm surprised there's zero crossover. I think that's the first list we've done where there's zero crossover.
Yep.
This one I'm surprised didn't make anybody. Bourne Identity was close.
Yeah.
It was close to my top five.
I assumed one of you guys was going to have it on there.
Spartan. It's another Val Kilmer one from, I think it was 2002. Just a really, really good, twisty spy movie where Kristen Bell gets kidnapped and she's a little whore, but her dad's high ranking. And then Austin Powers, the first one, whatever the first one is. I thought it was well done. It had its own story while still spoofing the genre and creating I got burnt out of it after everybody started doing it. But I remember the first time I saw that opening weekend in theaters and I laughed my ass off. Now I probably wouldn't watch it again. But at the time, that was a really, really good fucking movie. And then I had a couple that were kind of spy movies, but I left them off only because I didn't know if they could really be classified as spy movies. Hannah, which we mentioned earlier.
Yeah, we did.
She's an assassin, but she's being chased by spies.
Right, and she's kind of trained as a spy.
And I couldn't really put Hannah without putting The Professional, which would have been higher than everything, and that's a hitman. So I considered a hitman movie. And another one, Enemy of the State would have ranked high, but I didn't really consider it a spy movie. It's got the spy technology, and it's basically running from spies. Yeah. So, I mean, those two
It's pretty interesting, because we might have been able to bring a fourth person in here and still might not have had any crossover. You've got the Mission Impossible movies. There's four of those. Those are spy movies. There's tons of 60s spy movies. It was just a big genre back then. So,
I mean, and you look at 80s, it peak in the 80s. You had the Cold War. Yeah. Some of that trickled over into the 90s. There's really not. Now, I wouldn't say this. For as well as the Bonds do, I would think spy is kind of a dead genre right now. Salt, okay. Mr. and Mrs. Smith did okay.
Haywire.
That's why they've been trying so hard for Spy Hunter.
Yeah.
I guess so. Before we get out of this, I kind of confined myself to Bond movies, but there was one that I've got the longest face that none of you guys added from 1984, starring Henry Thomas and Dabney Coleman, Cloak and Dagger. Love that movie. It is one of my favorite ones as a kid. It's more of kids get sort of mistakenly involved in a spy sort of game. It had, the Atari. I think it was a 2600 factored pretty hugely into that movie. So it was everything I liked as a kid, James Bond kind of spy stuff and video games. So it was
in
awesome.
My head, if you want the perfect spy, that kind of movie double feature, Cloak and Dagger and War Games are always right. I can't think of one without thinking of the other, because for some reason those movies go hand in hand to me. And they're both awesome. They're both good. But Cloak and Dagger, I honestly didn't think about it. Like,
yeah, I guess that's what we're saying.
It probably would have been close because I liked it, but I guess I never, in my head, it didn't pop out as a spy movie.
So many to consider, but like, just for me, that just happens to be one of my favorite movies like ever. So that's why it immediately popped into my head, and I just, you know, assumed that, oh, well, Jesus, if we're going to talk about greatest spy movies ever, clearly we're going to mention Jack Black. But I guess not. That'll wrap it up for our favorite spy movies. If, like me, you were kind of sitting back with a bated breath that one of us would mention your favorite spy movie, and we missed it, feel free to send it to us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You know, you can tweet it at us, and we'll be sure to, you know, kind of say our fault, my bad, and talk about it on next week's episode. We'll give you some credit for that. Which, you know, we try and do. When we miss something, we'll kind of do a mea culpa and say what we missed. Getting back to something that we had been doing quite a bit was trailers. We've only got two for this week. I'm sure we'll probably have some more next week. The first of which I put on here specifically for Dave because I left Don Coscarelli off our list of best foreign horror directors. He's got a new one, which I guess could be considered a horror movie.
I don't know what to consider it.
It's tough. It's kind of maybe a genre bender, I guess you might say. It's called John Dies at the End. There was a trailer that had just kind of come out this week. It's definitely very much in his style, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah. I mean, Coscarelli did Bubba Hotep, Phantasm movies. Like, he's known for horror. This looks interesting.
It's definitely doing its job. It's doing enough that I want to see it. Every once in a while, you get like a half a peek of a monster sort of thing. And it's kind of about this new drug that people are taking, and it blurs the line of reality and a trip. The only issue I had in the trailer is it's kind of a pacing thing. Like, there's not like any action or suspense.
It's a slow-moving trailer.
Which makes me think it might be a slow-moving movie.
But I'm okay with that because you put Paul Giamatti in there, I'm sold. Stars Chase Williamson, who you probably know from if you've ever worked with him in the past or if he grew up next door to you. But
my roommate at USC.
Based in the trailer, it looks like he can do an okay job carrying it. It looks interesting. I wasn't blown away by the trailer, but it was enough for me to say, like, yeah, I want to see that.
If there's another trailer, I'll watch that, or I'll definitely do my homework on it, because it is weird. I don't know if it's a horror movie, but it does. It seems like an acid trip movie,
yeah,
more than anything.
Yeah, and I knew Coscarelli was doing it, so I was already, my interest was piqued. Like, Coscarelli doing a John Dies at the End movie, I was interested in. Then I saw the trailer, I didn't lose that interest.
You already knowing kind of the story from going into it, that's kind of something that happens with our next trailer. And that is West of Memphis. That's the Peter Jackson-produced documentary on it's the Memphis basketball team, right?
No.
With Memphis State with Penny Hardaway?
No, it's not, unfortunately.
Watched the wrong
Memphis
trailer.
With Derrick Rose?
And that's it. That's collectively all the Memphis basketball players that we know.
It's the story of the West Memphis Three. And the problem with the trailer, the positive is that this is Damian Echols' production company making this. So it's kind of told with his approval. But I don't know that this documentary is giving you anything that the Paradise Lost series hasn't covered.
But in its defense, there are three Paradise Lost movies that are all about 2 hours each. So I think this is just trimming the fat and putting it in one meal instead of breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yeah, if you haven't seen Paradise Lost 1, 2, and 3, you can watch this now and get the full story. Whereas, I mean, when they were making Paradise Lost, they did it like, hey, this is all we have at this time.
Plus, and at the end of this trailer, you see a couple interviews almost like teasing that they have something huge that they're going to tell you in this documentary, which Paradise Lost is a telling as it's happening.
Yeah, Paradise Lost is there as it's happening, and they definitely had their opinions. Whether they came out and said it, they conveyed it through the filmmaking on their thoughts and theories. Like, they were subtle about it, but you understood what the filmmakers thought. So this is going to be a different point of view on that. It's going to be more of Echols' point of view, I think, and yeah, if you've seen all three Paradise Lost, I don't think this is necessary, but
if you sat through 6 hours of it, you'll probably want to see this too.
It's a story that should be told and that needs to be told, and if this gets it into more people's heads and eyeballs, then it does serve its purpose.
I mean, I am one of those people who sat through 6 hours of Paradise Lost, and I will sit through 2 hours of this, but I'm ready for the dramatical take. I'm ready to see the, was it starring Colin Firth? I'm ready to see that one.
Yeah, I forget who's directing that, but
yeah,
the fictional one.
I'm ready to see that, and hopefully maybe that will educate some people who don't know about this story somehow.
And who don't like documentaries.
Yeah,
because
documentaries aren't for everyone.
That's true.
So...
So yep, that's it for the two trailers we've got this week. I think they're, you know, pretty dissimilar to each other. We've got a serious one and one not quite as serious. You know, take a look at those. Let us know what you think. Kind of a quiet week in terms of new releases. The wide release this week is, of course, Skyfall, which is the Bond 23, the 23rd official Bond movie. Limited release is Lincoln, that I believe is on 11 screens. Is
11 screens this week. It's going to slowly roll out.
For that inevitable Oscar buzz, which gets with any movie with DDO.
So, I mean, now we're getting in the shit of it. Like, now we're in film ball mode. Like, there's been a couple roll out, but the next few weeks, like, we're in full on film ball mode.
Full on film ball blast. Do we want to do an over under? Probably for Skyfall, because it wouldn't really even be fair to do one for Lincoln.
Yeah, Lincoln's too rough to tell on. I mean, although 7 million's interesting, because that's a lot per screen. But the way some of these big time limited releases have been doing, I think 7's reasonable. I'd actually maybe go. I'd go under, but
I would.
I
would too.
Big time, but I don't know, 40.
We do 40 for Bond. I take it that's what we're doing. I'm going to go over just because it's a big franchise that everybody knows. It's an action movie. There's nothing really else coming out this week. I'll take the over.
I'll go under. I think it looks awesome. The trailer looks fantastic. And I just think the sustainability of what's still in theaters. We've already seen Argo, you know, hold its ground. Wreck-It Ralph going to be in its second week. We got Flight. So I think it'll do well. I think people will turn up to see Bond, but I don't think it'll do 40.
Like, I think Wreck-It Ralph's going to hold strong, but it's still going to hit a big dip. Argo's been doing that 10 million range, so I don't think it's going to hurt it that much. I think Flight might have seen its peak, and then everything else I think is just going to fall off. I think it's going to be close, but I'll say over. I think it's in that 37 to 42 range. Like, I think it's going to be in there. So if it's under, I think it'll be very close, but I'll go with the over.
I'm pretty sure they're going to get $10 from me. So.
Well, yeah, I definitely know I'll see it, and I think that it's probably safe to say, from what I've read about this movie, it would instantly make my top 5 Bond movies just from everything I've read thus far. And I think Mendez directing, I think Javier Bardem is going to be a really creepy
Bond expert. Over under on how many women he fucks, how many people he kills.
Oh, God, he kills, like, a decent amount of people. They don't have official stats on Quantum of Solace, I don't think. But I'm going to say he's probably going to kill 20, and I'm going to say he's going to fuck 2.
All right.
So that's my over and under.
4 if you count Adele.
Oh, because she's a big fat person?
You said that.
A great big fat person, is that what you're saying?
I was counting hers, too, because she's with child.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to say 5, and that's all I'm going to say. 5. And it has nothing to do with Adele being pregnant. So let's do our watch this. If you're not going to go see any of the old movies that have been out for a couple weeks that are holding their own in the theaters, or you're not a Bond guy, or a Bond lady. We have some female listeners. Maybe not by the time we get to the end of this. But if you're not either of those persuasions, what might you be watching this week on VOD or Netflix, DVD? Television.
I'm gonna say Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, which I said was influenced by The Spy Who Came In From the Cold. The neat thing about this spy flick, it kind of makes you feel like a spy. It was directed by the guy who did Let the Right One In, and he has a very distinct style where he doesn't tell you a whole lot in his directing. You kind of got to figure it out for yourself. So in doing that, you kind of feel like a spy watching this spy movie, and it's really cool when you put it all together for yourself at the end. It's a rewarding movie to watch.
It's a slow burn. Like, yeah. I love that movie. Be prepared going in. It's a slow burn. I'm not going to go spy movie, but since we were talking Bond, I'm going to stick with Sam Mendes and throw out my favorite Sam Mendes joint and also my favorite Tom Hanks movie, if you don't want to go see Cloud Atlas. Road to Perdition. Fantastic movie. Another underrated movie.
Starring James Bond. Or did you already say that? I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, Daniel Craig was in that. So was Jude Law, who in another world might have been an awesome Bond. Jude Law, one of my favorite Jude Law roles, because he wasn't, this when sexy Jude Law was a thing, and he was the opposite of sexy in this movie. It's just a really fucking good movie. That's Road to Perdition. I couldn't remember if I said the title of the movie. Of the movie is Road to Perdition.
Not only, I was going to say, you didn't pull a Kevin Bradway, because you did say the name of the movie and you pronounced the director's name correctly, which I am about to not do right here. I've got two, and the only reason I put two is because we talked about both of these movies and neither of them are any good, which is kind of depressing. The first movie is from the aforementioned Timo, but it's Timo Varensola, who directed Iron Sky, which is the Nazis on the dark side of the moon, which I thought was going to be just hilarious. It is not hilarious.
I'm sorry to hear that, because yeah. I wanted to see it.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can still see it. I'm not going to stop you from seeing it.
You're telling me to see it.
Well, yeah, because it sounded cool, but it's not. So, you know, take that one with a grain of salt. Obviously, it wasn't going to be a serious movie, but yeah, not very good. You can pass on that. The second one came up, and I think it was either Dave or Continuity Police Jason West that mentioned in my list of movies that really need a good and proper remake or sequel or whatever. I think it was sequels. I mentioned The Wicker Man needing a sequel, but actually a sequel, not a remake with Nicolas Cage, a sequel done by Robin Hardy, which he did. It's called The Wicker Tree. I think it came out sometime last year. It is out on DVD. You can watch it. You don't need to, because it's not very good. It takes everything that was good in the original Wicker Man and doesn't put it in. So it's, you can tell that Mr. Hardy is not a Christian, and he's not really a big fan of organized religion to begin with. But that's about the only carryover from the original movie. It doesn't have the same atmospheric charm that the original Wicker Man did, and a lot of the movies to come out of the UK, the horror movies that came out in the 50s and the 60s. So, yeah, my bad. There is a sequel for The Wicker Man. It's just not as good as I had hoped. So you've got four movies to watch this week. Two of them are good. Should check those out. The two that I told you about, I'm telling you ahead of time that they're not that great. So, yeah, watch them. Don't watch them. Who's to say? But if you do watch any of those, you can tell us what you think. moviesonup@gmail.com. You can tweet at Dave and Kevin at moviesonup or their respective Twitter handles.
You can get me at Dave Bacella, or I have another show called Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave. You can find in the iTunes store or at ericanddave.com on Twitter at Eric and Dave.
I'm on Twitter at Kevin Bradway, Kevin Bradway on Facebook. Check out the Movies On Up Instagram page. It's just Movies On Up, no spaces. And you can follow us and see some pictures of what we're doing and of the contests and such.
Dave mentioned iTunes. Feel free to leave us an iTunes review. It's free to do. It really does help us out a little bit. And it makes us feel good. So stop on by iTunes and leave us a review. Tell us what you think. You can tell us in a review, or you can just send it to us. We will appreciate your feedback and act on it accordingly. And we'll actually read the emails now that I'll have to tell Dave how to get back into the email. But till next time, keep it up.